Ave and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast series about the rulers of the ancient world's most famous figures. I am your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode XIX, Nero, the Youngest Emperor. With Claudius now deceased, it falls to his adopted son to become the next emperor. And at the age of 17, he's the youngest and most inexperienced emperor that Rome has seen yet. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Nero came from an incredibly grand background. All the Julio-Claudians did, but he had really good parentage on both sides. His mother is Agrippina, and that's Agrippina the Younger. So we've got two Agrippinas. We've got the one who's married to Germanicus, and then we've got Agrippina who's their daughter. So what this means is that Nero is the son of Agrippina, which makes him the grandson of Germanicus, which makes him the great-great-grandson of Livia, and also related to Augustus on the other side. That's just through his mum. His father is a man that you might not have heard of, called Gnaeus Domitius Ahenobarbus, which is a great name, which means red-bearded. And apparently the men of his family did tend to have red beards, or bronze beards, it actually means. And although he might not be famous to most people, he is actually the grandson of Mark Antony and Octavia. And Octavia was the sister of Augustus. So he has got really blue blood on both sides. And he's a true Julio-Claudian. He's related to both sides of that family. So he's absolutely got a great claim to being emperor.
Is that the best claim of any emperor yet?
Well, they're all Julio-Claudians.
They're all Tiberius, getting really kind of interbred and overlapped at the moment, aren't they? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess you could say Tiberius had less claim because he wasn't directly related to Augustus.
He was just adopted into
He's adopted into the family. He's sexually related to Livia only by blood. But we shouldn't underestimate how important adoption is to the Romans.
So was he always groomed for a notable rank then?
He really wasn't. It's quite surprising, given that he has that background, that he isn't being groomed for power. But this is because of the machinations that are going on within the Julio-Claudian family. So if we go back a couple of emperors before Nero, we have Claudius before him, we have Caligula. Now, Caligula is Agrippina's brother, so that you'd think that looks good. But Agrippina was one of the sisters exiled by Caligula. So that means that Nero was kind of left without his family around, and he was looked after by his aunt. And the way Suetonius describes his childhood makes it sound pretty sordid and cheap. It's not a very good upbringing. He doesn't have the best teachers when he's very young. He doesn't have good influences around him, which is what Suetonius is particularly worried about. Nero's fortunes really begin to rise when his mother is recalled from exile and she marries the emperor Claudius. So he becomes the stepson and then adopted son of the emperor.
We've talked about this a bit in the Claudius podcast, but how did that change things for Nero? Was he given responsibilities? Was he given any power at all of his own?
Well, he's very young at this stage. He's still a child. And in fact, when Claudius dies and he eventually becomes emperor, he's only 17, which is just an adult for the Romans.
But he's important enough to be married off at this point, isn't he?
He's married off to Claudius's daughter Octavia, which, as we've seen so many times before, is a way of cementing him within the family. This is what you use marriage for if you're a Roman aristocrat, and really giving the message that he is up for succession, that he is one of the people who might succeed Claudius, which is in fact what happens. Although, as we've mentioned before, Claudius has a son of his own, Britannicus, who basically gets passed over in this process.
So he was favoured by Claudius over his own natural son.
Well, in fact, what seems to have happened is that Claudius makes them co-heirs and Britannicus is wiped out, probably by Nero or by Agrippina.
When Claudius died, Agrippina has been implicated in it, but was there any knowledge on the part of Nero?
Well, Suetonius says that Nero did know about it, and this is not because he's saying Nero was directly involved, but because he says that Nero made reference to it afterwards. So he made kind of pointed little supposedly funny comments. One of the rumors was that Agrippina had poisoned Claudius by putting poison into mushrooms. So Nero was supposed to have made reference to mushrooms and said things like, oh, it's the food of the gods. At least it turned my father into a god. I.e. it killed Claudius and then he was deified. So that's a really kind of sick joke that you could only make if you had insider knowledge, if any of that is indeed true. As with a lot of things in Suetonius, we could read it viably as a kind of scurrilous rumour that Suetonius repeats. And even Suetonius isn't absolutely certain about this.
After the death of Claudius, Nero is made co-heir with Britannicus. So how does that resolve itself? We've seen these situations before.
It never turns out well. But you know what? People continue to do it after this too. They never learn within this imperial family. Britannicus dies quite young, and it's very suspicious. And even though I don't like to believe the rumor mongering, I think it is quite likely that Nero or Agrippina had him killed off.
Just simply because he's competition.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Agrippina has groomed her son for power. She has, you know, married her uncle to get him there. And she's not going to have this person standing in her way.
It was the day before he came of age as well.
Yes, which is very suspicious because he's sort of powerless. And in Roman terms, you're very vulnerable before you come of age. All right, Roman boys, they actually wear a little amulet around their neck to protect them, called the bulla. And they only take that off when they go through the ceremony that takes them into manhood and they put on the toga of manhood. And then they're more invulnerable. But as boys, they're considered extremely vulnerable. So it's kind of an important message that Britannicus has got rid of at that stage. And the story is that he was having some kind of fit, presumably if it was poison caused by the poisoning. And Nero said, oh, don't worry about it. He's got epilepsy. It'll go away. You know, he's just having a fit. He does that.
It went away.
Yes. He went away.
Yeah. So at the age of 17, he's now the youngest emperor. So was Nero's focus truly on being the emperor at all?
Well, it doesn't seem to be. But for the first 5 years, so he becomes emperor in 54 CE, and until 59, the sources tell us that things go relatively well. One of the reasons for this is that Agrippina has brought in the very best tutor for him. So if he didn't have a great education while she was in exile, she has bought the best. And the best is the philosopher Seneca, who is a famous Stoic philosopher, also writes tragedies, and just known for his incredible learning. And also is somebody who seems to have a certain amount of good advice to give Nero. He keeps him under control to a certain extent. He's still fairly young. Also, the head of the Praetorian Guard, the Praetorian Prefect, is a man called Burrus, and he has a lot of influence over Nero. So between the two of them, and also with Agrippina sort of being the power behind the throne, they seem to have at least helped Nero to make the right noises, to do the right things, to keep the Senate happy, which they weren't very happy with Claudius towards the end. So he does things like he gives money to senators who've fallen on hard times, right? And if you fall on hard times, you might fall out of the Senate because you need wealth to stay in there. He shows them enough respect. You know, there aren't mass executions. The power of the informers is brought back a bit. These informers that are always there telling the emperor that there are people who are plotting against them. He also keeps the ordinary people happy. He puts on shows. He gives out donations of money and corn. And for the first 5 years, it seems like it might go very well. And of course, Nero has all of the benefits that Caligula had at the beginning. He's got those links with Germanicus. Germanicus is his grandfather, and Germanicus's wife, Agrippina, was much loved as well, especially by the military. So he's got everything going for him. And it really does seem to be his own character. This is certainly what Suetonius would have us believe, that turns things around, that makes him unpopular, at the very least with the Senate, and turns him into this kind of demon emperor.
So really, the 5 good years, as you say, is probably down to good influence.
Yes. Although we should stress that even in the 5 good years, Britannicus is got rid of. You know, it's not right. Like there are no murders or bad things ever happening.
As I said, relatively good years.
Indeed. At the end of that 5 years, though, he seems to have been involved in, or indeed, as the stories in Tacitus and Suetonius tell us, actually been responsible for the murder of his mother. And also, if you believe some of the stories that come up in Tacitus in particular, he committed incest with his mother. So 5 good years might not have been that good.
So Nero only had really one involvement in foreign affairs and in the military, and that was within this good 5 years. So can you tell me about that situation? What happened with Parthia?
Parthia, which had been sort of the old enemy who Augustus had supposedly sorted out, became a problem again. And it wasn't direct conflict. Like a lot of these problems between powers, it's a sort of proxy war. And the problem was Armenia, which is near Parthia, and Parthia wants control over it. Now, it's not part of the Roman Empire, but it's an area that Rome has some kind of influence over. So there's what we call a client king there, which means they've got their own king, all right? He's one of them, but he's somebody who is sympathetic to Rome. They don't have the bother of really having to defend them, but they have influence there, all right? And they won't invade. And the Parthians decide they don't want to do this anymore. The Parthians want control over that area. So they start to make noises about this and, in fact, impose their own king. So Nero does actually send armed forces east to deal with this. And initially they have success, and then it's a terrible failure. And so, as so often happens with Parthia, it ends up being a bit of a fudge. It's more of a diplomatic solution, where the Parthians do have some influence, but the Romans sort of get to decide who's going to be king of Armenia. It's really a war over who has control of Armenia, which is a much less powerful state. The Romans, therefore, at least have to say yes to whoever is going to be king. And really, the end of all of this is something that Nero tries to turn into a big PR stunt in 66 CE. So towards the end of his reign, he has the new Parthian king, Tigranes, come to Rome. And there's a lot of grandeur and, you know, he comes in a great procession with lots of pomp. And Nero uses this as a stunt to sort of show his own power. This man has to come and sort of show obeisance to Nero. But it really backfires in terms of PR because Nero spends so much money on it. And by this point, he hasn't got lots of money and he's taxing more than people want. So it just looks like needless extravagance. And that's the way it's often portrayed.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University. And you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, please subscribe to it on iTunes and leave us a review there, because reviews make us happy and help our rankings. You can follow both of us on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans and I'm at Nightlight Guy. Emperors of Rome is also on Facebook, and at the time of recording, we're just about to hit 200 fans. So come along there, like us, and join in the conversation. A couple of months ago, we put out the call for the topics that you'd like to hear about the most. And next week, the first By Request episode will hit your ears. So for that episode, you won't be hearing the next chapter of Nero. You'll be hearing instead about his mother, Agrippina the Younger. Until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.